small group three already.
Same person.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
I guess he's
maybe they can
mind.
Also maybe they have psychic connection with each other. Yes, go ahead.
It's not about the meditation.
Okay.
The Laughing Buddha.
Which one?
Laughing Buddha.
Oh, yeah.
It's just another form of...
Yeah, it's mainly in the Chinese tradition, and it's, I heard it's Maitreya. And in some versions you see little children on the knees.
Mm.
So it's just love. Maitreya means love, actually. So Maitreya is supposed to be the next Buddha after Shakyamuni. Next one is Maitreya, and yeah, his main aspect is love. So you can, the Laughing Buddha is just so happy.
Yeah.
Just it's just nice. Yeah.
Funny.
Funny as well, yes. Yeah, so fat. Okay. One more. Time is getting more precious. Now it's finishing. Every minute we have to be careful. So we begin, if anybody has anything they would like to mention related to this practice of exchanging self with others, which includes the Tonglen meditation. Anything you want to share before we carry on? Yes.
That,
for
John,
the
Jihadi
John. Actually, now he has a name, which I think is better. But yes, it's a very serious case.
And we both mentioned that he took off his head
mask
cover.
Or whatever.
Really.
Cover and then
I read one comment that he's a psychopath, and that actually helps to understand how he could do that. You know, psychopath doesn't feel any compassion.
No.
They don't, therefore they can do many brutal things without feeling. So that helps me to understand, otherwise I can't understand it.
But when you do Tonglen, you don't even need to understand.
No, you don't.
It is
suffering. Absolutely, yes. Yes, it's true. Yeah. But they interviewed one of his teachers from school.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you see that? And she said, oh, he was such a nice boy.
No, but she said that he had some tantrums.
He did have some anger problems,
yeah.
Yes. So maybe that's some clue.
Yeah.
But
they also interviewed his parents.
Oh, I don't think I saw that. We can understand that.
But you can't say that anyone that does bad things might be psychopath because I don't know, like World War II, they weren't all psychopaths.
No. I just mentioned that because it helps me to understand how he could do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
Oh, you're brainwashed.
No, psychopath is a distortion. It's a psychological phenomenon.
Some people are psychopaths.
Psychopaths.
Yeah, they exist.
They don't
so
feel a thing.
We don't know if somebody is, but if somebody diagnosed him, maybe they can find out. I don't know. Anyway, let's be careful not to get distracted. Let's stay with the question. Is there anybody want to just say anything about the meditation? Otherwise, I have some more talks to give about that. Yeah? We will do some more meditation before we stop for lunch. In 45 minutes. Originally I thought to do this whole meditation again, exchanging self with others in Tonglen, just so that you get even more practice to remember to do it later. But equally, there's another meditation for developing bodhicitta called Seven Causes and Effect, Seven Cause and Effect Method, which involves thinking all sentient beings have been my mother. So I just asked the group, would you like to do that same one again in order to reinforce it, or would you like to do a different one?
Different.
You think different? Yeah, different. Okay. I mean, you will have it all on the MP3, so if you want to do it again, you can just listen, and then eventually you can learn it, because the best thing is when you learn it, like you said this morning, to do in silence is better, because then you have complete control how long you stay with each part. Okay. But both of them begin with equanimity. Both of them begin with equanimity. And there are different ways to develop equanimity, and the next time I will use a different method. Equanimity is itself quite challenging, but it gives the basis on which we develop love and compassion. And then eventually the love and compassion become so strong that the feeling to become enlightened emerges. And with this Tonglen, it's that itself develops the bodhicitta. Just this practice itself develops the bodhicitta. And the way it works is that a Buddha is completely just taking and giving all the time. It's just spontaneous. Doesn't, no effort, no thought, it's just natural, just continuous. So actually, when we're doing this meditation of breathing in the suffering from others and breathing out the happiness to them from us, that is really beginning to do like a Buddha would do. It's just like that. It's not much more complicated than that, actually. So we're just training ourselves to be a Buddha, actually. So it's quite nice in that way.
When you do that, you don't really, do you receive something back?
Okay. So is it just training, or is it something really happening? That's the question. Is it?
I think so, because I felt like drained. Like
you felt drained of energy at the end?
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody else feel anything particular at the end?
What did you feel?
Drained of energy, like he lost her energy.
Yes.
Did anybody feel that also? Did
no.
Anybody? Yeah.
No, a little opposite.
Opposite.
Yeah.
You felt you gained energy.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it should be to give you energy actually, but if you feel drained, then you have to be a little careful. It's true. So we have to be skillful. You really, it takes many years to be able to do this practice. Fully, and don't feel, oh, I must do the whole thing now. Just do it slowly. Start just with yourself 1 week ahead, 1 month ahead. That's quite easy actually, but it's also nice. Then there is the question, which I ask my teachers, is this just from my training, or is it really possible? And the different teachers gave me different answers. So there's not one answer to that question. So quite a lot of teachers say, actually, it's just training. It's to train your mind to feel love and compassion to others. That's the main purpose, and to develop your mind towards enlightenment. And then later you will be able to actually do it. But my main teacher, not just some small teacher of mine, my main teacher said, definitely it can help. He said, definitely. And he explained it to me in quite a lot of detail. He said this is called subtle dependent origination. And when you have connection with other people, like strong karmic connection, which we discussed the other day, including some that you don't remember, they might be in the hell realm now. They might be in the hungry ghost, they might be an animal, they might be in the god realm. Or they might be a human that we didn't meet, or it might be somebody close to us. He said, if you practice with really pure motivation, it can have an effect. Because the mind does have a connection to other people. We do have a connection. This isn't just imagination. It's actually true. That the mind is not limited just to the space of this body. The mind has the potential to go at a distance. And there are many things to prove that in kind of research, actually. You can find there's many different scientific researches which show that. If you think like that, also it really helps you.
I was going to say, it's very helpful. Even the possibility that you've just given us, that I can help, it gives a lot of motivation.
A lot of motivation.
It's wonderful.
A lot of motivation. So, for example, if you know somebody who is sick, one of your friends gets sick, and you really want them to come big better, do this practice. Why not?
Maybe we'll get sick.
So that's your question as well. It might maybe I will bring this suffering to me. Now, you have to be willing to do that. This is what can be difficult, I must admit. So you have to be really selfless. You have to be really willing to let go of self-cherishing and really give the happiness to others if you're going to do this practice fully. And the fact is that most of us are not ready for that. Let's be honest. At the moment, most of us would care if I get sick. But if somebody else gets sick, of course we will go to the shop to get the medicine. But to actually take the sickness onto ourselves, not sure. Not sure.
Mothers, say
for your child.
This is true. Child. So the mother would do it for the child. I think definitely.
The baby.
The baby,
yeah,
especially.
A grown child.
Yes, and also some fathers would do that too, actually, and so it goes on, and so this is one thing: is you have to do the practice fully, you have to feel I'm really prepared to take that. Now the next thing is to say, you won't get sick. But you have to think, I'm prepared to get sick. So it's like two things.
I think the movie Green Mile, did you see the movie Green Mile? John Coffey, he takes sickness from people.
Yeah,
and then
but he gets sick.
No, he didn't get sick. Then he spit it out.
Okay.
Then he's very tired.
Right. Okay. So there's some shamanistic practices like that, actually. If you look at different cultures in the world, in some shamanistic cultures they do just like that. Like in Brazil, I saw some film. But this is not quite exactly the same as that. But it's still got some connection, yeah.
But we have to be sincere because
we do.
It's very easy not to be sincere.
Yeah.
Here. Because in here, we have Yael here. She was sick. And now, which one of us would have said, okay, if it's possible, I'll be sick instead of you. You go to class completely okay. This is real.
That's right.
This is real.
I agree.
Could we say?
Yes. Could we?
And that's a question that if we ask myself, ourselves, then it makes it kind of more honest.
Yes,
and I think that honesty is here, especially here, has to be. We have to remember it.
Thank you very much, Tammy. You're right. My wife has a lot of migraines, and actually, I find it unbearable. So I decided I will do it for her. And then, I never had migraines, but then I started to get one or two. I thought, oh, maybe it really worked.
Scared you?
No, I was pleased. Yeah, I thought, oh, that's good. And the other thing is, sometimes you can be in a situation in life, like at work or with somebody, and then you can see this person is suffering. Immediately you can start to do the practice. Of course you don't tell them, you just immediately do it. And sometimes you can see them change. You try. And you don't get sick, usually. Usually you don't. But anyway, as Tammy says, you should do it as if you're prepared to take their suffering. If somebody is looking very unhappy, or maybe angry, different things like that, start to breathe. Now the best thing is, when you come here, remember emptiness. So, it actually dissolves in emptiness. Then it goes. That's the best way to make sure it doesn't actually happen to you. But then you breathe out your own understanding of emptiness, and then feel it maybe touches their karma, and it somehow purifies what they're going through. And you try, if you're willing to try, you will possibly see their face change. Once I was with a group practicing, and there was another room in the building, and we could hear one person got so angry with another person. We could hear the voice, and it was horrible. It was really horrible. And I thought, I can't carry on with this. I was giving a talk. I can't carry on.
About love and compassion.
No, I can't remember the topic. Whatever it was, I thought, I can't continue. So I said, let's all do Tonglen. So we did. And slowly this voice changed. The anger reduced. Of course, maybe it would happen anyway. I can't promise that it's because of our practice. But we could feel that somehow we were having an effect. It was very nice for us. And eventually the voices became just calm.
I have a question. Yesterday you said something that I thought was really smart. Before you help, before you can be kind to others, be kind to yourself.
Yes.
I think it's really smart because when you are okay, you can help a lot more people.
That's right.
So here, when you take someone else's sickness, you know what I mean? It'll look complicated.
Yeah, but you weren't here before break, were you?
Right, no.
Well, before break, we did this practice, and we began for the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I can't remember, imagining ourselves sitting in front in 1 week's time, or in 1 year's time, and we took all the suffering from ourselves. Yeah? So it did exactly what you're saying, beginning with oneself. Then when I'm clear, then I can take somebody I really love and practice with that person. Once I was doing a 5 month solitary retreat, and I was studying this practice, and it advised you to use your own mother. So my mother had already passed away, but I imagine she's sitting on the bed. My mother suffered so much, it's just impossible to describe. So then I started to do this practice. I was crying and crying so much, yeah? But I loved my mother. I don't want her to suffer. So for me it was possible to do that. I didn't mind, okay? So you start with somebody you really love, but start with yourself, because we love ourselves first, mostly, isn't it? You're right. That's what Lama Yeshe said also.
Your logic works. You just haven't been here.
Yes.
When you tell people that close to you that you love them, that benefits you, then is that a selfish thing?
Oh, gosh. You're always asking me about romance. Like I'm an expert. I don't know much. I'm not very successful in this.
Not romance.
Okay. All right, not romance.
I mean, I
think if it's very spontaneous, if it's really spontaneous, then it's fine. But one problem is that when you say spontaneously to somebody, I love you, it's that moment. But they think it's forever. And maybe you do. But how do you know tomorrow? Maybe you change. So it's the trouble with love is you know, there's some poetry about never speak
but
your love.
If love lasts forever, you always love.
Oh, right, okay.
Good.
Okay.
So it's not like I love you one day and the second day I don't love you.
Really? Okay, fine. You mean that kind of love. It's complicated, but I never heard a lama say, I love you.
Really?
Yeah. But they do. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without words.
Yeah. But of course it's personal. What you say or what you do is personal. But be careful with words. You know this, do you have this saying in Hebrew? Words are cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know that? Yeah.
But then action speaks
Exactly. So that's the way to love, is to do something kind. Then that's real love, isn't it? Yeah.
We need to hear it even if it's a lie.
It's our mission.
We like to hear
it.
We like to hear
it.
Yes. Yeah, when we say I love you, what we really want is them to say I love you too.
Oh, I love you forever.
Beware. I can't think of anything else to say right now, and I do want to do more meditation, but if you have any question, then now is the time to speak about it. Yes, please, yeah.
I was thinking about that I have a lot of fears of study in front of me, and study can be really frustrating when you do it a lot.
Uh-huh.
The approach yourself or the no self that you can apply it to work, to how you apply it like to this feeling of endless studying with no actual purpose, like there is an actual purpose but it's really far, and I need to study and study, and you do it for years and years.
Right, so you've really thought about the goal of this study.
Yeah.
It's in order to do something really important that you need to do the study. It's really, really important. Because otherwise, don't do it. If it's a pleasure, that's okay. If it's not a pleasure, then think, why am I doing this? Is it to become rich? Is it to become famous? Because if so, it doesn't mean much, because you're going to die sometime. Maybe the next day after you get the qualification. So check, is it really important? Really? Because many people do these things because their parents want them to, or to impress somebody, or to become rich or famous or whatever. But this is just worldly achievement. But, for example, a doctor, how many years? 7 years, maybe? Then after that, they can benefit so many people. Then all the time when they're studying, it's very hard work. I don't know in Israel, but in England they have to spend some time working in hospital 12 hours a day. They have to do incredible hard work. But all the time they're thinking, when I'm a doctor, then I will be able to benefit so much. Then it's okay. Even though it's hard work, they don't mind. So then you have to think, what is the purpose of this study? And then there may be some serious questions. You know, but it's a difficult one. Yeah. You know, like there's teachers, like your teacher Geshe Pema Dorje. I'm sure he studied for about 20 years in the monastery, something like that. And I'm sure that all the time he felt, this is good, because this will help me to be more benefit to others. And indeed, that's true, because now he can teach with confidence something very beneficial. So some study is more worthwhile. Some study is just for worldly purpose, which for ordinary people, yeah, okay, that's all they know. I don't know.
Thank you. Every profession you choose, you can choose to everything you do in life, even if you're a businessman,
yes.
You can benefit others.
You can, yes, but you know, if it takes 10 years of study, but really the motive is to become rich and famous. And then, okay, I can benefit others when I'm rich. I can maybe give them a few pence, you know, a little bit. That's not good. I mean, anyway, I'm not the person. Don't ask me. I can't judge for you. You have to decide.
Yeah, no, but you did help me.
Uh-huh. Okay, fine. Thank you.
You need to become a doctor anyway, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Fine. In that case, it's really worthwhile. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very, very worthwhile. Actually, do you have the Golden Light Sutra in Hebrew?
Yes.
Right, so
in
English, yeah. Maybe he should look, there's one chapter about somebody who becomes a doctor. And he benefits thousands and thousands of people. It's beautiful. It's really encouraging. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't realize you want to be a doctor.
But you did.
Yeah.
You did. That's the example that you gave. I thought that you knew.
Yeah. It's one chapter, somewhere in the middle, I can't remember, or maybe in the second half, about somebody who wants to be a doctor.
Can you just mention what the sutra is? Because I think that the...
What?
Can you just say what is sutra?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody asked me.
Okay, do you want to... I'm just going to mention this. There's one sutra. It's a book, 150 pages approximately. And it's called the Golden Light Sutra. And this is very beneficial, mainly in areas where there is war. Or it's good for benefiting the country or the state, or to have a good rule. Maybe everybody should recite it before the general election. To have a result which is good for the country and which is good for the relations with the neighbors. This is also the purpose of this sutra. There's many chapters in it with relating to that. But in general, it's relating to bodhicitta. There's one small chapter on emptiness. There's one story about somebody who wants to become a doctor, who benefits thousands and thousands of people. There's many different chapters. And personally, I usually recite this on the special Buddha days myself. You should recite it aloud. And now I'm quite fast. I can do it in 2.5 hours. So it's a big job to do the whole thing. But alternatively, you can do one chapter today, one chapter tomorrow.
Do it at the same time.
Or you can do it in a group, yeah? And each person recites one chapter all together. There's many different possibilities. But it's really beautiful sutra. And it's very powerful. And it has some very good stories, especially towards the end, which are very inspirational. There's the final story is where, in a previous life, Buddha gave his life to a hungry tigress. She was starving and her cubs would die, and this young prince decided, now is the time to sacrifice my body. It's very, very moving. It's very powerful, and it inspires you. Of course, we can't do that, but it inspires you to give yourself in some way for the benefit of others. And so I would recommend that.
Can you just say what a sutra in general is?
Oh, a sutra is teaching usually spoken by the Buddha. Or maybe sometimes it's spoken by somebody close to the Buddha, inspired by the Buddha. So these are like the basic scriptures of the Buddhist tradition are called sutras. And yeah, there's also in the non-Buddhist traditions they call it sutra. Mm-hmm. The Kama Sutra is non-Buddhist, and it's a teaching on how to make love. Yeah.
It's not Buddhist, no.
But there is also a Tibetan one.
Our friends in Tel Aviv read together the Golden Light Sutra on Thursday, the Miracle Day.
Fantastic.
With Venerable Sangikana. With a Sangikana.
Yes, and personally I read it twice in the first 2 days of this 2 week period. And I would have read it on Thursday, but I didn't have time.
We were obstacles.
No.
You can find it on the.
You can download it, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Maybe somebody should translate it into Hebrew. Okay, so 20 minutes left. We're going to do this meditation now. So take a good meditation posture. Going to think about equanimity, which is not holding some close and others distant, but feeling equal love to everybody. And the first reason is because our relationships are always changing. The friend becomes an enemy, the enemy becomes a friend. The stranger becomes enemy or friend, and so forth. Therefore, we should have a balanced view towards everybody. Especially when you think of past and future lives, then it can change. And the second reason is a reason for those who wish to be bodhisattvas, to practice bodhicitta. And think of the example of a doctor. And in the waiting room for the doctor's surgery, there are 10 people waiting to see the doctor. It would be wrong, wouldn't it, if the doctor only treated those who were rich, or only treated those who are beautiful, or only treated those who were nice to the doctor. This is wrong. It's the same for a teacher in a school. They should treat all their students equally. And similarly, the bodhisattva should treat all sentient beings equally, with equanimity. And the third reason is the empty nature. Imagine you're standing on a mountain, looking across a valley at another mountain. You say, I'm standing on this mountain. I'm looking at that mountain. Then you climb down into the valley and up the other side, and you're standing on the other mountain. And you look across the valley, and again you say, I'm standing on this mountain, looking at that mountain. Which one is this mountain? Which one is that mountain? Which one is me? Which one is you? These terms are relative. Ultimately, there is no me and no you. Therefore, we should have equanimity, holding everybody equal. The next point in this meditation is recognizing all sentient beings have been my mother. First of all, remember the meditation or the reasoning I presented that shows that before the first moment of this life, our mind had a previous moment. Just as the physical material of our body also had previous moments in the sperm and egg, the mind had a previous moment in the mind of the previous life. Therefore, it's impossible to say there was a first life. Because where did that first moment of mind come from? Therefore, our lives have no beginning. They are infinite. Therefore, we probably met every sentient being that exists. Even having been the child of each sentient being. Imagine how she gave us life. How she fed us from her body. How she cleaned away our excrement with her hands. How she cared for us more than she cared for herself. These kind mothers are now in different forms, and we don't recognize them. But still, we owe them so much for their kindness. Imagine your mother of this life. Unfortunately, she became crazy. Unfortunately, she became blind. And she's walking near a very steep cliff. And she has nobody to guide her. And she is beginning to stumble. She could fall. What kind of child would not help? Just like that. All our kind mothers, all sentient beings, are crazy with the afflictive emotions. They are blind to the way to get true happiness, which is liberation and enlightenment. They are walking near the steep cliff, which falls to the lower realms. They're stumbling due to their karma. And they have no guide because they do not have a perfect refuge. What kind of child who knows this would not help? not try to become enlightened in order to benefit all of them. Now allow your heart to open towards all sentient beings, feeling loving kindness, warmth towards everyone. Think how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Allow this feeling to become stronger. In your chest, in your heart center, becoming stronger until you feel all sentient beings must be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. And again, allow the feeling become stronger and stronger at your heart center until you feel your heart could burst. This is called unbearable compassion. Until you feel, I myself will cause all sentient beings to be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Even by myself alone. This is called the special thought of universal responsibility. I now ask, how can I do this? What if I become very rich? Will I be able to do it? Even the richest person in the world cannot do that. What if I become very powerful? Would I be able to do that? Even the President of the United States could not do that. What if I become a god like Brahma or Indra? Even they cannot do that. Eventually, after much investigation, we discover I must become a Buddha, a fully enlightened one, in order to be able to do that. Make that determination, however long it takes, however many lifetimes of practice, even hardship, I don't mind. I will become enlightened to be able to benefit all sentient beings. Called bodhicitta. It's a very extraordinary and special kind of mind we could say it's the highest purpose, the most meaning that we can get for a human life or even for any life in the whole universe. Time. We meet again this afternoon. Have a good lunch.
משולחים אני מזכיר לכולם שהיום הפסקת הצהריים היא קצרה בהרבה מהרגיל. אז אחת ורבע במקום שתיים, ואז אנחנו נעשה שיחת סיכום. יש לנו שעה ורבע.
Thank you very much for everything. It's been wonderful.